Okay. So tonight our topic is going to be continuing to talk about differences between meat and milk, meat and dairy. We spoke before about waiting times between meat and dairy. How long do you wait after meat and how long do you wait after dairy before you want to eat the other type? Hanan Morrison sent me an interesting article, which is not for now, but the article was very, very interesting. It was about some of the historical development of the time for waiting after meat, meaning we talked about waiting 6 hours, waiting 3 hours, waiting even just between meals. So this article...
substantiation for something less than 6 hours?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we spoke the first week about that. There were a lot of opinions in the Rishonim.
It's heard of Rav Arashi, Rav Yosef.
Yeah.
And he said that it's a grave mistake that people think that less than 6 hours is enough. And it's a minhag of silas or like a minhag of stut or something like that. It was very, very...
That's very, very sharp. That's very, very harif.
And 6 hours is a must. It's not a question. It's that minhag and whatever.
Right.
That's the halacha. And
right.
Anything else, it's a mistake.
So we spoke about it the first week. Basically, we concluded that was more or less where we were standing also. But we said there were other opinions, just that we felt that the preferred opinion is that one, even for Ashkenazim. But we said that in Tosfot there are a few opinions that say that you just have to wait until the next meal. Not in the Sephardi poskim so much, but in the Ashkenazi poskim, there definitely were some like that. But we said even the Ramah, who says you can follow that or at least wait an hour, even he says it's better to wait 6 hours. So that's where that comes from. Not just for Sephardim, where the Shulchan Aruch says 6 hours, even for Ashkenazim, say that. The article of Hanan Morrison sent me was very, very interesting. This is a little crazy. He said that the history, this article suggested that maybe there was some Karaite influence here, and they wanted to suggest in the following way, meaning that they claim that there were some Rishonim before the time of the Rambam, before the time of even the Rif, or Yitzchak Alfasi, and some Gaonim that basically said you don't have to wait that long. Even on the Sephardi side, you don't have to wait that long. And this article suggests that the Rambam sort of expanded it to 6 hours before... the Rishonim before him, or at least the Rif also was in that category. The Rif and the Rambam expanded it to 6 hours, much more than Rabbi Hananel and some of the other Sephardi Rishonim before them. And he has some proofs that maybe had to do with some of the Karaite influence, and the Karaites specifically did not do this. And the Rambam wanted to make like a very big differentiation between them. So he added more time. You have to figure out what to do with that. It was very interesting because he brought some historical proofs also, how the Karaite influence expanded right around the time of the Rambam, like historically. That's when they got to be big in that area of the world.
The Minhagim we follow because of the Karaim. For the Bam Madlikim.
Right, so you mentioned that also, correct. Yeah, exactly, right.
Just to show them.
Yeah, exactly, right. So that was one of the examples also, that there, the reason why I say Bam Madlikim at night, on Friday night, of what we can use for lighting Shabbos candles is to... how do you say it in Yiddish? Against the Karaites who said we don't use light. Okay, not just do we not make light, but we don't use light on Shabbos. So it's to show them in your face, this is what Rabbinic Judaism says. Exactly. So this article was suggesting the same thing is true about the 6 hours here, that they were, at that time they were expanding their influence, and at that time also before that the Karaites were, they didn't eat meat at all.
Most of the Jews were Karaites.
Right, so that's a whole other historical question of whether it's right or wrong, or how many or how not. We're not going in there now.
But
correct. There was more. So they say there was more than we would think today. And at that time, before that, they didn't eat meat at all. They were still in mourning for the Beis Hamikdash. But apparently, around that time, they started to eat meat, but they didn't keep the laws of waiting between meat and milk, meat and dairy. So this is like the Rambam and the Rif's way of sort of keeping a separation between the Rabbinic Judaism people and the Karaite people. It was an interesting suggestion. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but he has some interesting ideas, where he was basically trying to show that the 6 hours is a much bigger expansion, which again later got accepted as halacha, but in the time of, let's say, the 9th or 10th century, it wasn't very, nobody really said that, and it only came later. And again, the Rambam gave a reason. He said because we're worried about the meat in between your teeth that might not go away or is still there, but basically this article was suggesting that was a big, big chiddush. And he points out a few proofs also from the Rishonim at the time of the Rambam that they took issue with some of his opinions. Not just that, also what he says about chicken. The Rambam says that the same thing applies to chicken, which is what our halacha is today. We all follow that today. But at that time, it wasn't so clear. A lot of Rishonim at the time disagreed with that. And they said, at least, even if it's true for meat, it's not true for chicken. So he wanted to say, this article wanted to say, it's part of the same idea. The Rambam was trying to stretch the rules to try to make a very major separation between the Jews and the Karaites. Again, very, very interesting. I don't think it changes the halacha one iota. But if you like history, it's an interesting suggestion to think about. He wasn't sure. He didn't say it definitively, but he was trying to make this, you know, this suggestion.
So
something to think
fantasy,
about.
Fantasy, you could go back in each time period and look at how Jewish observance was.
Right.
You know, from Orthodox Jewish
right.
observance.
Right.
You know, from the 1500s.
Right. Right. It's a fascinating historical project for research. You just got to be careful that it doesn't
right.
change the halakha. That's
right.
the only
right.
problem.
Right.
So you're also, you have to be careful
be focused, right.
that, you know, once the Rishonim, you know, has been accepted and the Shulchan Aruch accepts the Rambam's reason, and we have good reasons why to keep 6 hours, then regardless of what they did in, you know, the 10th century, in the 25th century, even in the 16th century, you know, by the time of the Shulchan Aruch, it basically was accepted, you know, to keep 6 hours, and some said 3 hours, even 3 hours still today, but you know, it's definitely already much more than what was accepted, you know, 1,000 years ago. So that has to be clear when you do these kind of things. But it's interesting though to see how things developed. If you look at it as how to, you know, Judaism is a live process. It's not dead and it's not stagnant. You know, things move over time, and you know, everybody's trying to find what the halacha is, but the halacha is not always today what it was 1,000 years ago, and that's fine. You know, not necessarily a problem. Okay, good. So today, as we saw from Rav Yosef, we've gotten more,
well,
you know, today 6 hours is much more accepted. That doesn't mean everybody accepts it. We definitely have a lot of people keeping three and, you know, other variations. But
based on the Gemara.
What did you say?
He based on his reasoning only the Gemara.
Yeah, yeah. So this article was saying the Gemara Dafka indicates the opposite. You could argue about this, but the Gemara, again, we just learned the first year before you were here that you have to wait an amount of time between one meal and the next. And this, you know, some people say that means the amount of time, you know, not actual meals, but the amount of time. And, you know, the other approach is, well, it doesn't mean the amount of time. It means till the next meal, whenever you eat your next meal. Okay? Five minutes later, as long as your meal is done, then you could already have dairy. Again, there's different opinions, you know, how this works, but whatever it is. Anyway, so that was the first share. Tonight, I wanted to focus on was talking about some of the other separations between meat and dairy, having more to do with, not in terms of time, but in terms of location, in terms of people, okay? Meaning that if people are eating meat and dairy, and one person is eating meat and one person is eating dairy, do you have to have some sort of separation? And if so, what type? And also in terms of perhaps if we get to this, I don't know if we'll get to it tonight, if not next week, in terms of utensils, okay? Meaning what separations do we have? Are we required in terms of how we eat our meat and dairy? Okay, can you use the same utensils for meat and for dairy? The answer probably is not. But are there any exceptions to the rule? Cups, tablecloths, you know, anything like this? Is there any type of differentiation between those kind of things, or do we just say everything is always separate? Okay, again, what's the idea behind all these things? Obviously, the idea is that you don't want to mix dairy and meat together. That's obvious. But the question is, how far does it go? So let's start with the first question of people. Okay. The main case in the Shulchan Aruch and the Rishonim is the following. Okay, let's say, we'll give it a modern type of example. Okay, two versions of this example. All right, example number one. You're at home, all right, and you are, again, some people have dinner together, all family eating the same thing, some people don't, some people have snacks. Let's say, for, you know, argument's sake, you're having a meal, and your meal consists of our examples from last week, some sort of dairy dish, okay? Noodles and cheese or something fancy. What? Pineapple pizza, we said, right? Yeah, okay. Good. I haven't checked since last week. I don't think it got into the stores yet. Right? Okay. Let's say you're... Right. We'll see. I should have done it this week. I didn't have a chance. And your daughter, let's say, or your son or somebody else in your family or your wife, was interested in, you know, having hot dogs, or if you want to go a little healthier, chicken, you know, chicken breast or something, whatever, take your pick. So the question is, are you allowed to have them at the same time? Meaning, let's say you're both sitting at the table. Okay, they're both sitting at the kitchen table or the dining room table. And then basically what's happening is that one is eating meat and one is eating dairy. So can they do that, number one? And number two, even if you could do it, can you do it? You know, do you have to have a separation between them? Do you have to do anything else? So what do you say, or what do you know?
You say right here. You're sitting, you have the wish, where you're having the cheese and noodles. And
okay. Is that okay? Is that okay?
You have to establish a sign. Let's say that this is a sign.
Okay, so that's the question. So do we have to have a sign? So
yeah.
That's fine, I'll pick it up.
East of the bottle is Meishi.
Okay.
West of the bottle is Mirchi.
Good. Okay. So that's definitely one of the halachas that they say, that you have to have a sign. Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the question is, what's the purpose of the sign? If there has to be a heck or something like that, so what's the purpose? So the idea is, I'll read to you here.
That's a big something for
right.
The other side.
Okay, I want to make sure there's a separation here. There's actually a machlokas in the Mishnah, way back to the Mishnah time. It's machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, actually. Okay, at least in terms of chicken. Maybe for terms of meat, maybe they agree. This is a whole discussion in the Gemara. We're not going to get into it. But even in terms of chicken, Beis Hillel basically says that you can't put chicken, meat, and dairy on the table at the same time. And you certainly can't eat it at the same time. Meaning even two different people can't eat it at the same time. Okay, that's number one. Now, in the Shulchan Aruch, okay, the way they get to this, the way that they present this is as follows. I'll read it to you. The language of the Shulchan Aruch here. It says, "Afilu basar chayav o'uf." Okay, even meat that's from a wild animal, which is not necessarily basar v'chalav doraisa, and oaf and chicken also, we mentioned, is not doraisa. It's only derabanan to have chicken and dairy. Asur v'halos al shulchan shochal alav gvina. You can't put it on the table with that you're having cheese, meaning if you're eating them. Okay, shelo yavo la'achlam yachad. Why? So you shouldn't come to eat them together. Okay, makes sense. All right. So the question is then, is there any way that you would be allowed to do this? Okay, so this is what they say. This is also based on the Gemara. The Gemara already has some interesting distinctions here. Okay, the Gemara says there's two different points here, ways that you could allow this. Okay, two different ways. The Ramah, okay. The Ramah says, I'm sorry, it's not the Shulchan Aruch, it's the Ramah. I'm sorry, it's the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? It says, Im asu shum heker, if you make a heker, which I mentioned before, some sort of recognition, some sort of sign, kigon, what are the examples? So the first example he gives is shekol echad ochel amapa shelo. Okay, each one is eating on his own placemat, so to speak. Okay? Or today, you could get away with saying maybe one eats on the table and one eats on a bag or on a newspaper or on a placemat or something like that. Okay? That's number one. Or afilu ochlev amapa achas. They both eat on the same table. Venos din benyam pas leheker. They put a piece of bread as a sign in between, some sort of recognition in between. Then it's mutter. Okay, why is that mutter? That's your way of ensuring, right, that you're not going to start sharing food from one to the other. Okay, if you have either a separate, a special placemat, or you have a special sign in between, so then you're going to make sure that reminds you that you're not going to switch from one to the other.
It's interesting to have which one that use food as the separation.
So it's fascinating, right? It's very, very interesting.
Because that, I would think, I'm hungry.
Yeah,
bread.
Exactly. Yeah. So what do you think that means?
Need a sign.
What would you suggest?
So much for the sign.
Right, so much for the sign. So you're right. Your point is absolutely right. So the question is, what's the answer? It doesn't make any sense. Think for a second. See if you can figure out something.
They don't feel like washing it or like bread. I don't know.
Okay, so if you think creatively, you're right. You're on the right track, basically. Okay. The Ramah says clearly that the case is davka she'en ochlin min hapas. You're not planning on eating from the bread. Okay, if you're planning on eating from the bread, it doesn't count. That's part of your meal. That's not going to help you prevent you from, eating eating your dairy with the meat or whatever it is. That's not going to help. But the thing is, if you make it as a separate thing that you're not eating,
maybe tofu or something.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to start on that. I guess tofu. If you're like me, you don't like that. Or if it's bread, but let's say I would guess what they mean by bread here is not like a piece of slice of bread. I would guess what they mean is like a whole loaf of bread, and you're not planning on opening on cutting it up at all. Okay, so if you're doing that, it's just sitting there, a big loaf. Okay, sort of like they buy you sell in Israel here, where some places you sell like a big loaf that's not cut up into pieces, right? And you need to get a whole bread machine in order to cut it. So that type of loaf, I would think that's probably what they're talking about here. That is a sign because if you put that on the table, and you're not planning on using it at all, so it would make sense that maybe that would be considered good enough, and you wouldn't have to you would be allowed to eat, to eat separately one meat and one dairy, and you're not going to mix them up. Okay, so. Based on that, you can ask yourself also what else would be included as a sign. Okay, how would you like classify the general rule of what would constitute a sufficient sign and what would not? How would you formulate
like different colors or something say utensils or anything like that already, but maybe the plates or something or. Whatever it is.
Okay, so again, there's two ways. If we're talking about the placemat...
Just making a separation.
Yeah, so the placemats is fine, okay? Once you have a separate surface that you're eating on, that for sure is good enough. Okay, that's not that's acceptable. The question that I think is a little more unclear is if you're talking about an actual siman, meaning it's a different object, okay? If I tell you a piece of bread is good, so what else would be good or what else wouldn't be good? Like, how would you formulate the rule? How would you, if you were trying to figure it out for yourself, and the Ramah doesn't really explain so much. He just says... he does. He gives a couple lines, a couple words here. He does explain it. you could guess what it is. It's logical. Okay, but how would you classify? I mean, why would a book be a sign or be good enough or not be good enough? Let's say my Gemara here that I work from, let's say that Gemara is sitting on the table. Is that good enough? How do you define what's, whether it makes sense or not?
It was intentionally.
Okay.
It just happens to be...
Okay, so let's say I take a bottle of water and put it on the table.
Right, so it normally doesn't belong on a table.
Oh, okay, so now we're talking.
But the brand does belong.
Oh.
I'm going the other way. That's what I'm saying. I didn't like the
brand. I think that's all good. Okay.
Also, this also belongs.
That's true. Here, so that belongs on the table. And the bread, let's assume for now the case of the bread is where it's like a whole loaf of bread that's not cut up. So yeah, it could belong on the table, but if you're not using it, then maybe it's out of place. Okay, let's say my books. My books might not belong on the table. Let's say, you put, it depends whose house. In some houses, a computer doesn't belong on a table. In our house, that's exactly where the computer goes. The main point that I think that you're getting at, Arthur, I think this is what makes sense, and this is basically what the Ramah says here, is that it depends on whether that's the normal place to put it. Okay, if it's an object that normally goes on the table, it doesn't count. Okay, the way he says it here, here it is. If you put a cup, something that you drink from on the table, uvelav hachi, without that, ein darko lios ala shulchan. It's not normally on the table. Okay, not just a regular plastic cup or even a regular cup, like a very fancy goblet or something which you don't normally put on the table when you're eating. Okay, it's like for show. It's a fancy thing you keep in your family in place for things you don't want to get ruined. So if that's sitting on the table, maybe you don't want it to be there, but if it would be on the table, that's something which is not normally placed there. So he says, that makes sense. Have a heker. That's considered to be a valid heker. Okay? And he says, in that case, even if you drink from it, it's still valid. Why? Because it doesn't belong there. It's not normal to drink from that cup. So if it's something which doesn't belong there, what are you going to realize? If you're sitting here eating your noodles or your pineapple pizza, okay, and you're sitting there eating your steak, okay, so then if you see this big object sitting in the middle of the table, you're going to realize, hey, wait a second, that doesn't belong there. That's going to remind me we can't share our food, right? Makes sense? That's basically where they're going with this. So anything that doesn't belong there, it could be different in different people's houses. It's not one size fits all. But whatever doesn't belong there, if you see it, then you realize something is, to remind you that something is different,
if you can combine with a very similar rule that the couple and the wife is in Nida.
Right.
Also, they suggest that they should put a sign.
Okay,
the question is, it's probably said that, fine, this is this object here.
Right.
Okay, fine, my wife is in Nida. Let's share food. Oh, we can't focus. So, probably you need another object.
That's a good question.
Put strange objects on the table, one after the other.
Okay, I got to check that one. That's a good question. Let me just reformulate your question.
It's very similar.
Right. So the halakhas are actually very, very, pretty much the same. Okay, and they borrow from one to the other. Okay, the halachos of Nida, if your wife is in Nida, so they say also that in order to eat together, it's just you.
You work in somebody's house and they have all these strange things on the table, Yeah. Okay, there's a lot of things.
Either they're strange or they had one of these things. Right. So it could be a
favorite. They're both eating milk. I have an idea.
Yeah, be careful. Okay, it's very, very interesting. The halachas are very, very similar for those two things. For putting a sign when she's in Eid also, is also supposed to be something which is unusual, is not supposed to be on the table. If they're eating alone, if there are other people around, they probably don't need that. But if there's nobody else around. So the question you're basically asking is if the halachas are very, very similar to here, so then what happens if they're both together? Okay, the husband and the wife are eating, one's eating meat and one's eating dairy, and she's in Eid, do they have to have two things on the table? It's a good question. I don't remember. I have to look again. Okay. I don't remember offhand. It's a good question to think about and see if anybody talks about that. I'm sure somebody says it somewhere. I don't remember. So I'll take a look. But yeah, basically the halachas are pretty much the same. And they borrow from one category to the other because they're very, very similar. Okay. So that's basically the idea. That's where the Ramah says here. Okay. So that's one way of going with this. Okay. If you have, again, one eating meat and one eating dairy. So then as long as you have either different placemats or different surfaces to eat on or some sort of object, which is a heker, to remind them that they're not supposed to share food, then that's good enough. The other way of looking at it is that, and this doesn't argue with it, this is an additional point, okay? Let's say that we're not talking about your husband and a wife or, a father and a daughter, father and a son, family people. Let's say we're not even talking about friends. Let's say, okay, we're at work, okay? This works. Yeah, this works in Chutz Lars and also here in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, let's say you have like a dining hall or something. Okay, and there's not, you know, they don't, you don't put on placemats and you don't put on, you know, newspapers or things like that. It's just, you know, a few tables and you sit at the table. Okay, one person at work is eating their, you know, deli sandwich or their schnitzel sandwich. And one person at work is eating, pick something else this time, that's not pineapple pizza. I don't know.
Why not? Another slice.
Okay, fine, another slice of pineapple pizza at work. They brought it to work also. Hey, everyone, piece of lasagna or, you know, noodles and or cheese sandwich or whatever it is. Okay, so now, at work, let's say we're talking about not people that work together very closely at work, but people that don't really know each other, okay? Is there any concern in that case, okay, even if they don't have a hecker, and even if they don't have a placemat, is there any concern in that case that they're going to share food?
It depends on the culture.
Go on.
Societies, that it's a common thing that people change for. Like in Japan, for example, I don't know. It's forbidden, it's very rude.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily a must to...
Okay.
So it's funny, you're thinking about the people, I'm thinking about the food.
Go on.
I got like a lousy whichamacallit cheese sandwich, and he's got a steak over there. I'm going, maybe we should share or something. You know?
Not a fair share then, right?
That's right, yeah. So.
The same question is like in Huzlaris.
Right.
You're eating your kosher cheese sandwich,
right? Yeah.
The guy is eating pork.
Oh, good. So they talk about that also. They talk about that also in the same halacha here.
Even Israel, it's going to happen.
Unfortunately, it could happen here also. You're right. It could happen here also. Here, you wouldn't actually know, though, because it's a little harder to tell if it's not kosher here.
It's not obvious.
Right. Yeah. So they talk about that. It's a similar idea, but the question is, how do you apply it? So I'll tell you what the basic point is here, and then we're not going to get to all the details now. And I don't even have sources right here for all of them. I can just tell you that side. But the idea is like this, okay? The idea is... the following. And by the way, you should just be aware, I missed a couple points along the way. I didn't mention every single opinion here about some of the things we're talking about. I'm just trying to give the basic points here. So he says here that this is also based on the Gemara, by the way. Okay, this already comes from the Gemara. I'll tell you the case in the Mishnah, and then we'll look at the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. The Mishnah says, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, he says, Shnei achsanayin. Okay, two achsanayis. You know what achsanayin is? Achsanai is also a word they use for Hanukkah. Okay, two like guests. Okay, that are visiting somewhere. Ochlin al shulchan echad. Okay, let's assume they don't know each other. All right, they can eat at one table. Zeh basar v'zeh gvina, one meat and one cheese. Ve'ein choshin, and they don't have to be worried that maybe they're going to share and there's no halachic problem. It's permissible. Okay, so the question is, who are these achsanayim? Okay, these guests, and you know what's the story here? So the Gemara, they go through a whole thing which makes it into the Shulchan Aruch, which seems to be that we're talking about a case where they don't really know each other, okay? If they don't know each other, I'll read you the Shulchan Aruch now. He says, when you're not allowed to have, you know, meat and dairy on the same table, dafka v'shnei b'nei adam ha-makirin zeh-zeh. Only if they know each other, okay? If they don't know each other, though, okay, achsanayim she'ein makirin zeh-zeh, they don't know each other, mutter, it's permissible. What's the difference? Okay, what's the logic here that this is based on?
Because you're familiar with somebody, you might share. Say,
oh, okay. If you don't know them,
I'm not going to talk to them.
Right, it's pretty right. One thing, whether they're going to talk to them or not, we tell our kids not to talk to strangers. You know, okay, fine. You talk
food.
To them like they work in your office. But yeah, it's a little weird to share food.
And certainly,
right?
somebody really don't know. And if we're talking really on a kosher level, you know,
correct,
who knows,
absolutely,
who knows
right,
what they
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So that's what they say. That would be permissible. Okay, meaning you can eat at the same table because we're not concerned that you're going to share from one to the other. But if you know each other, so then already there is a concern that you might share, and in that case, it's actually usher to eat together at the same table, one meat and one dairy, unless you have what we said before, either you know a heker or a different placemat, etc., etc. Okay, what's not so clear, actually, we're not going to go into so much here, but what is considered to be knowing in this case? Does it mean you have to like be your good friend? Does it mean you just have to be an acquaintance that you sort of know them a little bit? You know,
I mean,
how far do you go?
Based on a level, if you would share food. If you would know that you could eat from the other person's plate. I think that's the level.
Probably he's not machpid on the charedis. You have a problem.
Okay, let's say you know his kashrus is impeccable. Let's say he's you know, a chassid with you know all the longest pants ever and long black coat. And that's true. Okay, you're right. I give you that. I completely agree with you.
Totally
you're right. Yeah. I'm asking about that point. But even though let's say you know that his kashrus is great, but you know you're not the closest of friends. But let's say if you really wanted part of his steak sandwich, let's say if you asked him at the end to cut off a little piece for you, you know that he didn't eat from, would he do it? You're not the closest of friends, but if you asked him, you just had to get up the guts to ask him because he really really wanted the steak. You know, it wouldn't have been your first choice of something to do, but you really really wanted it, and you had that tava, you wanted to get it.
Especially, this is a common thing in that society.
Okay.
If people usually do, or asking such a favor.
Okay, I hear.
Like, for example,
it depends on how.
In Italy, you know, people are very close to each other and warm.
Right.
In Sweden, they're very cold and, you know, strained.
Interesting. Okay, I hear that. That's not exactly what the Acharonim say here, but it makes a lot of sense, and maybe one could adapt what they're saying and work that out also. The way that a lot of the Acharonim say it, this is based on the Aruch HaShulchan and a few others, this is the way Rabbi Forst brings it down also, he says that somebody who is included as an acquaintance is somebody who is on friendly terms, and this is a combination based on what you said. The two are on friendly terms and would feel comfortable partaking of one another's food, even though they may expect payment. Okay, you got to throw the money there. You know, if you pay me $10, a 10 shekel for your, you know, for my steak sandwich, I'll give you half of it. Okay, all right. Again, does it mean they have to be the closest of friends? No, but it means that in some form, if one of them got up the guts to ask the other one for a little bit of the food because he really wanted it, and the other one would say yes, and they would feel comfortable doing that, then that would be enough to say that it would be a problem, correct? Again, how far does that go? So they don't quite spell this out, but it's basically what you're saying. It really depends on the society, okay? In some societies, even if they're, you know, acquaintances and they work together in the same office, but nobody would ever do that, then, you know, probably not.
You know, in place Sweden, guests usually pay after the dinner.
Really?
To their friends.
That's crazy.
Yes.
Wow.
And for a party, everybody brings his own.
They bring their own, really? Must have very stringent standards
and
of kosher.
If you don't have, you can buy from your friend.
So interesting. Wow.
So, which is not, you know, it's very.
Do people have friends there?
Really?
After that.
Really?
They have business partners.
Business partners, right. That's right. Everything is all a business opportunity, right? The whole country works on business opportunities. No wonder IKEA works so well. You know, it's all. They have the business mentality. They're great. Okay, so again, that's basically what you're going to have to look at then. You have to look at, you know, how friendly are they? I mean, they don't have to be close as friends, but they have to be somewhat comfortable that they might actually theoretically share food. Again, even here today, in Israel or in let's say, I don't know, Europe, but in America also, you know, it's not so common that people just share food just like that. But I'll tell you that if it was like snacks, like a bag of snacks, maybe that would be different. Yes. Not a steak sandwich, but if you have like a bag of something like this, like that, so then already...
You want to be polite.
Yeah, so that could be, you know... This one is a bit of a tzarachin, okay? We're not going to, you know, it's hard to get exact hagdaras here, how much this works. Okay, the Seder. So that's in terms of the people. One other thing that's mentioned in the Pesachei Tshuva is another point. Okay, let's say that, so we discussed the case where I'm sitting here and you're sitting there, okay? But let's say that I'm sitting here and somebody's sitting over there, okay? Does that make any difference at all? Why? Okay.
There.
Why would that be better?
Arba Amos.
Arba Amos. Okay.
Less of an inclination to share.
Oh, good. Okay, exactly. So that's what he says here. The Pesachei Tshuva basically points out so it could be that you could smell it. But I'll tell you what he says. Okay, if they're very far away. Far enough away that one person can't just stick out his hand and grab the other person's food, okay? Which basically means if I'm on one end of the table and you're on one end of the table over there, okay, I have to actually get up and walk over to you. If that's the situation, he says, everybody agrees that you're allowed to sit at the same table and eat one meat and one dairy, even without, you know, having the heker or anything else like that. Why is that? Because that by itself is enough of a heker, meaning the fact that you have to get up in order to go to him to get the food, that's going to be enough of a reminder for you to make sure that you don't eat food that you're not supposed to eat. Okay? Again, it's logical. Okay? Again, you could argue with the logic, but you understand these points are all not just like, you know, xeras akasa of things that are thrown in the air that don't make any sense. They make a lot of sense because they have to make sense. Because the whole concept here is how do we make sure that you don't go and share food with somebody else when you're not supposed to? So we do it in a way which is logical. Anything which makes sense that you wouldn't do that because there's enough of a reason why you wouldn't share, that's good enough. Anything which is, you know, which there is a chance that you might share, so then it's a problem. Again, how do you define the details? So it could be, we could argue a little bit about that in terms of what the post can say, but in general, the points make, you know, the concepts make a lot of sense. Okay? There's another interesting example here mentioned by the Yalkut Yosef, okay? The current chief rabbi. So he says, what about the following case? Let's say that you have, you know, again, no separations, no placemats, no nothing, but you have a third person who's sitting near you, and he's going to be the shomer. Okay? He's going to make sure that this guy doesn't give to that guy, and this guy doesn't give to that guy. Is that good enough?
Is this strange?
Agreed upon already?
Yeah, let's say they agreed.
Agreed ahead of time.
Let's say they even paid him. Okay. Okay, fine. Yeah. No, let's say you said it. They asked you. You be our shomer. Okay, is that good enough?
Sure, of course.
Okay, so you think that's good enough? So I would have thought that's good enough also, but Rav Yosef says it's not. Okay, he says that the shnei v'adam makirim zeh, they know each other. They're at one table. Okay, one's eating meat and one's eating dairy, and they want to put rotim lahamid shomer kadesh shiashkiach aleihem. Okay, they want to put a shomer there to make sure shlo yitamu zeh mizeh. They don't taste from each other. He says eim hakel bazeh. He says you can't be mekel. Okay, it's tough to make a heker. So this one is a little bit more of a chiddush. Meaning here logically you might have thought that that it might work. He says that it doesn't work. Okay, now maybe he's going to say it doesn't work because it's not mentioned in the earlier sfarim. Okay, meaning maybe logically it would work, but we can't make up these things on our own. I don't know. Again, I could hear an argument against this. I could hear against it. That's what he says, and I didn't see anybody else that disagreed with that. So that's an interesting point there. Another interesting point. Okay, what about if you have one person now? Okay, let's cut down from two to one. All right, there's one person. Okay, and you are sitting at the table and you are eating your chicken. Okay, on the table at the same time, there's leftover from breakfast. Okay, there's cereal and there's milk. Or whatever. Okay, let's say your family didn't clean up after themselves. This is what happens in my house every single day. Okay, I'm stuck cleaning up everybody's leftovers after breakfast because they're rushing out the house, and going off to work and to school and to God and whatever. And I happen to, work from home, my computer, or at least from the shul here. So I'm the one around. Okay, fine. So the question is, in that case, are you allowed to eat? Can you eat at the table without a hecker or without a placemat in that situation where there's nobody else around? It's just you. But there's two kinds of foods on the table, okay? We're eating your steak sandwich, and there's just snacks on the table. They're dairy. So what do you think? Do you think it's a problem? Okay. Why is it a problem?
Because you can't pick something.
Oh, okay. What would be the other side? You could say maybe the other way. It's fine. What would you say? What would you say the other might be the other side? Is there another side, or you think it's clear that it would be a problem? Maybe you could say that two people is more severe. Why?
It's going to be nice.
No, I think it's more. I think it's worse still with one person because you have nobody. If it's two people, two things have to happen. You have to want it, and the other person to give it to you.
Right. Okay.
If it's just sitting there, nobody's going to bother you. Nobody's going to say anything.
Okay.
And you should pick something.
Okay. Okay.
I'm saying. So I'm trying to hear what you.
That's fine.
With two people, you can ask something. Versus, right. Oh, listen, you're eating something. So,
okay, I hear. So let me tell you the two sides here and tell me if you maybe got one side. But, here's the machlokas. Okay. So the Chachmas Adam, who's the author also the Chai Adam, Rav Danzig, so he says that you're allowed to with a heker. Okay, meaning you have to have some sort of heker on the table. That you do have to have, but he said that's allowed to. Okay, he says that the following. Okay, apparently the idea is that if you have a hecker, so then you assume that if you see, even if everything's on the table, but as long as you have some sort of reminder, then you're not going to come to do it, and it should be fine. Okay, that is what he says. Okay, so that's what he says. Now, he quotes here in the sefer here the Hafla, one of the other achronim. So he says that apparently that even if you have a heker, it's still a problem. It's strange. It's a bit of a chiddush. But he says the idea is like this. Okay, we said before, if you have two people there, that as long as you have a heker, it's fine. That's because there's an additional point there that the two people. Is you said one way is that say, well, it's harder to get it from the second person. If there's one person there, then he could just pick it up himself without a problem. So there's more reason to be machmir. Okay, fine. In that case, you'll be makil with the heker. But certainly without a heker, you can't be makil. And with a heker, maybe you could be makil. But he says the Hafla says with two people, there's a reason to be machmir, more machmir also, and that is that second person also they might remind each other not to do it. Okay, meaning yes, there's a concern they might share. But there's also an idea that they might remind each other. So if it's just you by yourself, and there's nobody else there, so even with a hecker, it's not good enough because you have nobody that's going to remind you not to do it. The hecker's not good enough, he's saying, basically. Mm-hmm. Hecker only works if you also have the other person that might remind you. Yeah. But if you only have a hecker by itself and no other person to remind you, he wants to say that you should be more machmir. Very interesting. Again, I'm not sure if that's the accepted halacha. Or if forced here.
That's kind of what I said.
Okay.
It takes two to tangle with the two people.
Okay. So it's unclear here. Rabbi Forst doesn't really. He just says that you're not allowed to do it if there's meat at the table, the same table you're eating dairy. He doesn't really talk so much about the heker. He doesn't really discuss the whole question of the heker at all. He leaves it out. Okay. Anyway, that's the story there. So again, there are different opinions about this. What they do point out, though, is that everybody would agree that in this case, what we said before, if you're at one end and the other food is at the other end, that might work. Okay, that would be okay.
If somebody's eating chicken, and the other person is eating something parev, but
right.
from a milchik
That's a good question.
Plate.
Good question.
Or both are eating
right.
Parev.
Right.
One is a fleshy
right.
plate.
Right, good question. So we have, the halacha parts of that we haven't really spoken about yet so much in terms of how that works with, what you can eat with or not with if you have a milchik pot or a milchik plate or whatever. But for these purposes, I think we can say that these halachas probably don't apply in the same way. I mean, these are the whole concern here is that if you do it, it's going to be a serious iser d'rabbanan of eating dairy and meat together, or an iser d'oraisa, perhaps, depending on how it's made.
Yeah.
If you're just talking about cooked in a pot, but the food actually is parev, so that in that case, I think you would say even if lechachila we can't do it, but because it's not on the same level at all, so then it wouldn't be a problem. Okay, there's no problem of eating at the same table or the same person, with another person. That I think is you don't have to worry about that at all. That would be fine. That's my understanding. So in terms of these purposes, it would be permissible. Okay. So I think we covered most of the cases. There's a lot more here, but this is good. One or two other cases they talk about here is if you have a goy. Okay, if you have a non-Jew. So can you eat at the same table with a non-Jew? This would be more relevant to chutz la'aretz. And that they say, and this is relevant also to our kashrus question before, for the non-Jew, they basically say you're allowed to eat at the same table as him, even without a heker, because it's clear that you're not going to be sharing food.
So we were talking about before, but I know people don't know, which I was thinking about when I used to go to work.
Right.
And I worked for from place, actually,
right.
But they had non-Jewish people working there also.
Right,
but
right.
We all sat at the same table.
Right, right.
Some of the times the boss
right.
made lunch, that was a really good thing.
Right.
So if you all ate the same things, so what's
right.
the problem? But you're right. We're all seeing it. There's not. I don't think
right.
I wouldn't think there'd be a problem because
right.
I'm not.
Right.
I'm
right.
not thinking.
So the food that's okay if it's a goy, but there's one big condition, and this might not be fulfilled in many of these cases, and that is that the goy is eating something which is not kosher. If he's eating a kosher sandwich or a kosher snack, so then already it might still be a problem.
Okay.
So that you don't always know.
I don't think that could have come up.
So it's hard to know.
Right,
if he's eating meat, then you're probably right. The meat probably wouldn't be kosher, unless he bought it at the deli down the block, which happens to be kosher, which in Manhattan, by the way, could happen. Manhattan, let's say you're in like Times Square or Grand Central Station, if you're familiar with the places. So there's a few kosher delis over there. The non-Jew might like the Mendes, Mendes, it could be the goy happens to go by. He likes it also. So then you might have a shiloh if you're eating cheese and dairy. Okay, I'm sorry. I take it back. I didn't mean it. So that might be a real question. Okay, but if he's eating meat and it's treif, and for sure that would be mutter. The big question comes up when you're talking about Jews that are not frum, or Jews that are the hashkacha is questionable. That's not so clear. Okay, that's basically the shiloh we had before. It's not so clear what the status is in that case. Which rule do you follow? It seems like we probably, if it's possible that the food might be kosher and edible, then you probably should be machmir. But if you know already, like clearly that you wouldn't trust his kashrus,
also maybe rabbis say that
it's not so clear. Okay, it's a gray line.
Here comes another thing. Havas Yisroel.
Yeah,
you don't want to hurt.
Correct.
Feeling,
you're right.
Probably it's
you're right.
It has some kind of hashgacha.
You're right.
You
right.
eat anyway, but
you're right. In Echanami. But I don't know if anybody's going to be like offering to share their food. Usually you don't. How often does that happen? Is he going to offer you, you want to take some of my food? Do you want to take some of my snacks? I guess it could be. It could be. Today it's easy. Today you just say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm on a diet. Or, something. Or I don't like that food. It's not hard to get out of these things today, which we'll learn later when we talk about questions about kashrus in general. That's a good way to get out of things. If you're talking to people that are not frum or they don't trust their kashrus and you don't want to insult them, there are plenty of ways to get out of this question without insulting their feelings, unless they know you so well.
Everybody has some kind of allergy.
It's always something. It's not hard. Unless they know you so well that they'll know you're lying. They're trying to pull a fast one on them. But yeah. Okay. The Seder. So we're going to stop here. The only other thing we didn't get to the question of the tablecloths yet. We'll save that for next time. We'll talk about tablecloths next time and other silverware and also the question of bread. Okay, of having dairy bread or bread made with meat. Is that okay? That's another Issur D'Rabban and the Chazal need to try to make bread parv, which we'll talk about next time. Okay. And just to finish off with just a quick thought about the Parsha, which is interesting. I have to figure out where this goes exactly, but the whole question of the brachos that Yaakov gets from Yitzchak, from his father, that Yitzchak originally wanted to give to Esav and then ends up going to Yaakov, the whole thing is very strange, and it's hard to understand a lot of it. What's interesting is that what seems to have happened is that Yitzchak originally thought the bracha should go to Esav. Question is, well, how could that be? Did he really think that Esau was going to be the next inheritor of the Jewish people? And then in the end, he just gave it over to Yaakov. Yaakov stole them. You know, so there's a lot of stuff about this, obviously, a lot of discussion. But just one interesting thought, one suggestion that some of the Mefarshim say here is that if you look at the last bracha, Yitzchak gives Yaakov a bracha at the end. After the whole thing with Esau, he gives Yaakov his own bracha before Yaakov runs away to Haran. And he basically tells him, that your children are going to be the inheritors of Eretz Yisrael. And, that basically had the signs of the bracha of Avraham. He said, Yitin lecha is berkas Avraham. You should give the bracha of Avraham. So a lot of the Mefarshim say, not all of them, but a lot of them say that's the true bracha for Yaakov to become the inheritor of Bnei Israel. That was clear all along. And Yitzchak always intended to give it to Yaakov. The bracha he gave to Esav was a question of the physicals, the gashmias. Okay, Esav was the one that was going to maybe be the gashmias. And what Yitzchak had in mind, perhaps, is that Yaakov and Esau were going to work together. Esau was going to provide the Gashmias, and Yaakov was going to provide the Ruchnias. Okay? It's a great idea. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Rivka already knew from the Nevuah that she got from Hashem that wasn't meant to be. Okay? That the idea was not, Esau wasn't supposed to be part of this, and maybe because just that's what Hashem had in mind it wasn't supposed to be, or because Esau maybe didn't know how to use the Gashmias properly, as you see with the whole story with the lentil stew at the beginning of the parasha, where he just gobbles it up and he wants to sell it for his birthright. He obviously doesn't have the proper perspective on Gashmias. Gashmias has to be used in service of the Ruchnias. But if Esav was looking at Gashmias as its own, its own level on its by itself as being, a means to an end, so then he wouldn't possibly be able to use that Gashmias in the right way with Yaakov to give him, to work with the Ruchnias. And therefore, Hashem already decided that Esav couldn't go together with Yaakov because he didn't have his values straight. So, again, there's a lot of ideas here you could talk about, but in terms of that particular suggestion, the idea to keep in mind is that we talk about eating and halachos about eating. The point of these halachos are to keep our our heads straight on that eating is not a means to an end. Eating is not eating for pleasure, and eating is not only for our own bodies. It's good and we can enjoy it, and we do enjoy it, and that's fine. But we also have to keep in mind that it's not just the means to an end. It's basically the way that we help ourselves get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, either to serve Hashem, or that even when we eat with, in mind that we're enjoying Hashem's world. We're making a bracha to say thank you, Hashem, to understand that the food comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anything that keeps the element of Ruchnias in your food, that's, what we want to get out of our food, and that's where Esav missed, and that's what Yaakov, hopefully later got both brachas. He gets both. That's his goal and our goal as his descendants to realize that point. So Bezer Hashem, we should take the halachas of kashrus and of food, and Shabbos is the same thing. To eat food on Shabbos is a mitzvah, but again, it has to be for the right purposes and with the right intents. We should be able to take our havanas and use them in the right way when we deal with our gashmias in this world. Shkach, shkach. Okay.